All right, so we're taking a look at this fish mucus. Well, the scientists are, to try to determine if it can help Homo sapiens in our fight against the superbugs. So far, the research team has identified 47 different strains of bacteria from the slime. 47 different strains of bacteria from the slime. They weren't kidding when they said these fish are just traveling in a bacteria-infested environment. Five bacterial extracts strongly inhibited the MRSA, the methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. It inhibited Candida albicans, which is a fungus that causes infections of the mouth, throat, and vagina in people. So five bacterial extracts strongly inhibited the MRSA, and three inhibited Candida albicans, which again is a fungus that causes infections of the mouth, throat, and vagina in people. A type of bacteria from mucus on a particular Pacific pink perch showed some strong activity against MRSA and against a colon cancer cell line. Along with the potential for new antibiotics for people, this project could pave the way for drugs that target microbes on certain types of fish, thereby reducing antibiotic use in fish farming. This is something else that the study authors are looking into. All right. As we get ready to do a little bit of traveling, we won't take the jet this time. You know, I said this is an abbreviated Newsarite trip or journey because we're not going to be using the full hour the way we normally do when we're taking our Newsarite journeys. This time, we're going to cruise. Yeah, we're just going to cruise along the way, and we're not going to make as many stops as we normally would, but we are going to travel. And I tell you what, since this is our maiden voyage, now don't get upset with me. We're not going to feed you any of Granny's good food. Yeah, we're not going to do that this time, but have no fear. The next time we cruise, we will be feeding you. All right. So, here we go. We're getting ready to start this trip. And that's the sound of our cruise ship horn signal, letting folks know that we are pulling off. And I'll tell you where we're heading first. Let's head on over to London. And I'll tell you why I'd like for us to head to London. I'd like for us to take a look-see at what's happening with Julian Assange. A lot of you know he is co-founder of WikiLeaks. And for several years now, he had been holed up at the embassy in London, where he was really, really fighting extradition because of some alleged crimes. Now, you all recall what was happening. He was supposed to have been extradited to Sweden due to allegations of a sexual assault. And that occurred around 2012. That case has been dropped. And so, according to what we're hearing, he has no need to be concerned about that. However, he is still facing U.S. federal conspiracy charges as a result of the leaking of the government secrets that he posted to the website WikiLeaks some time ago. At Westminster Magistrates Court on Thursday, he was found guilty of failing to surrender to the court. So, as I mentioned, he had been holed up at the embassy for a number of years, and that was his way of really just remaining a free man. I got to tell you, I really was wondering how long that would last. I kind of sort of suspected that at some point it wasn't gonna work any longer. And as it turns out, it seems like that time is up. So that's where he is now. He has been arrested, and he is going to be represented by Jennifer Robinson, an attorney named Jennifer Robinson. And at this point, we're just going to have to wait and see. I tell you this, though. Some of you may remember, especially those of you who live in the Augusta, Georgia area, may remember the name Chelsea Manning. She was a former U.S. intelligence analyst who worked at Fort Gordon, who was also found guilty of having, she was arrested in 2010 for disclosing more than 700,000 confidential documents, videos, and diplomatic cables that she sent to WikiLeaks. She was found guilty by a court-martial in 2013 of charges including espionage. Her jail sentence was later commuted. She was given an opportunity to testify against Assange, and she refused to do so. And for that, well, she did pay a price. Assange was in the Ecuadorian embassy for quite some time, and eventually he was arrested. What do you think the outcome would be? What do you think the outcome would be? All right, so that's where we are with that. I wanted to give you that update. Now, in the meantime, how many of you, when you were children, and maybe, who knows, some of you are doing it now, painted by numbers? Yeah, you know, parents would go out, they'd go to work, they'd come home, and every once in a while, they'd bring gifts to the children when they returned home. I know sometimes our parents would do that. They would come home, and sometimes they would have some goodies for us. And sometimes those goodies included books that were paint by number books. And you used your crayon or your paint, whichever you used, and you used the numbers to help you draw your pictures. Well, the inventor of the paint by numbers picture died at age 93. He recently died at age 93, Mr. Dan Robbins. He was the artist behind the paint by numbers craze that swept America. He died in Sylvania, Ohio, at the age of 93. He was working at a paint products firm in the 1940s when he invented the paint by number kits. And by the 1950s, millions of those kits were being sold across the U.S. every year. Millions being sold across the U.S. every year. It is amazing that something so simple could be so significant. But it was significant. We really enjoyed those paint-by-number kits. And it seems like, you know, it's not like we got one every month, but it seems like when we did get one, even though we had had paint-by-number kits before, we were still excited about the new paint-by-number kit. Well, his inspiration for the idea came from a very, very famous artist. And ladies and gentlemen, when I say very famous, I do mean very famous. I want you to tell me who this famous artist is. Dan Robbins, inventor of paint by numbers kit, was inspired by a very famous artist. Tell me who he was. This particular artist used a similar method when teaching his apprentices how to paint. Let me let you think about that. Mr. Robbins first joined Palmer Paint, which was a company that was selling children's paint sets after serving in World War II. In a post-war era of increasing leisure time, the company's owner, Max Klein, asked Dan Robbins to find a way to market the paint to adults. Remember now, he joined Palmer Paint, which sold children's paint sets. How many of you remember having those, that set, that kit of paint that may have been five or six different colors? And they'd be in flat containers that were round, and you might have green in one, yellow in another, blue in another. Yeah, those paint kits. Well, they'd been selling those paint sets to children for some time. And the owner, Max Klein, said, hey, look, I want you to find a way to market our paint to adults. Of course, wanted to expand his market. Well, Mr. Robbins had previously said in 2004 that he remembered hearing that this famous artist we talked about, who I told you I want you to name for me, used numbered background patterns for his students and apprentices. So Mr. Robbins decided to try something like that. So he put together an abstract still life, a mix of Picasso, some Brock, and some Robbins. Mr. Klein told him he hated the painting, but he liked the idea of painting by numbers. Let me tell you the rest of the story in just a few. And be thinking about that now. I want you to tell me who this famous artist is who inspired him without even knowing it.